Welcome to the Adult Child of Dysfunction podcast, where we untangle the past, rewrite the present, and reclaim our future. I am your host, Tammy Vincent, and together we will break free from old patterns, heal wounds, and create new narratives. Are you ready to transform the effects of your dysfunctional past into your superpowers? Are you excited to get back in touch with your true, authentic self? If so, then hit subscribe and join me weekly on the Adult Child of Dysfunction podcast. Here we will learn from experts as well as experienced thrivers how to turn our trials into smiles while living our most authentic and joyful lives. Well, hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Adult Child of Dysfunction. Today, we have a special guest. Her name is Annie Imprena Martin. I'm sorry about that. And she has a story to tell, not one that we've heard so far in this podcast or in any of my episodes. So a little bit different. Excited to have you here, Annie.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Oh, you're very welcome. So tell the audience, I mean, now you're doing things to help other people. And as many of the people that are on these episodes and many of my guests, it's because you went through something that really took a toll on you and you found ways to get over on the other side and to now, and you're most likely now helping people in very similar situations. So tell us about your story.
So I grew up in a Catholic Arabic family with a lot of judgment and a lot of dysfunction. But growing up as a child, I didn't see it. It wasn't until later in my years, like early 40s, when I had the opportunity to reflect back and realize that I had a father who was a hoarder, would not throw things away, stored things, bought buildings to store things. My mother was 17 when my dad flew to Lebanon to marry her. He didn't speak Arabic. She didn't speak English. He was 33, she was 17. So it was not a nurturing family. There was a lot of resentment, a lot of pieces that built up over time. And I had younger brothers. So being an Arabic family, my dad's prize goal was to have a male. I was the firstborn, then my sister, then my twin brothers. And so when they were born, it was this very a celebratory high achievement moment for my father. And he continued in this dysfunctional state of letting them be without discipline or guidance. And they completely dominated my childhood. So that's the first step into the story.
So give us an example. I know you gave me one before we got on here, but give me one example of something that might happen in your household that would rock any little child's world.
the example that I had shared with you earlier is that my brothers would come into my room. They would pilfer my room and there would be no repercussions. There was no accountability or punishment to them. And they would come in and they would steal my babysitting money. They would go through my drawers. They would go under my mattress. They would look everywhere. And I had asked my dad, can I have a place to put my money, a lockbox? And he's like, no, you need to figure it out on your own. And so my bedroom was no longer safe. I couldn't put a lock on the door. And so the things that I had, my brothers one day took pink nail polish and drew all over my furniture. And it was that really beautiful, like Sears catalog furniture that was the 1980s beige with gold trim. Yep. No responsibility. But this started when they were born. My brothers would be, I think there's a memory I have where they're about a year and a half, a year old, in diapers. They must've been younger, a year. And they rolled down the stairs and I was at the bottom of the stairs, just daydreaming, playing with my shoelaces. And my dad yelled at me to catch them. But when you're daydreaming and you're not expecting two toddlers rolling down hardwood floor stairs. And then that became I became the scapegoat of how I should have caught them. I'm the cause of their pain, when really it was the grown adult that failed to put a baby gate at the top of the stairs, not the 7-year-old, 6-year-old at the bottom of the stairs. So these stories just built up and built up.
So yeah, so you got all the blame for everything that bad that happened to them because they were the prize possession. They were the the pride and joy and the little things that couldn't be damaged because they were going to carry on the family legacy and the family. I mean, and that's very common in a lot of cultures, in a lot of cultures, but it doesn't get to that extreme, obviously, to the treatment to the girls, but it does in some. We're here in the United States, and then of course they have their problems, but you know, that's pretty extreme. And you grow up feeling what, how do you feel that made you feel like growing up?
Oh, I was angry. Angry. My whole life, I was angry. There are videos, the old camcorder videos, and I'm looking back at this young, like 7-year-old, 8-year-old, and she's angry. Angry. And I just grew up, but it was internalized anger. So most of my life, people said, you're depressed. And my internal system's like, no, you're not depressed. You're not. It was anger. It was angry that I wasn't being treated equally. It was anger that I was being punished for something that was so far out of my control, that sense of helplessness. I was angry that no one saw the value that I brought as a human. So I had anger my whole life.
And it's
fast
funny that,
forward.
So it's funny that you said anger too, because most, like I think of me and when I was in those uncontrollable situations, I was like scared and fearful. And I'm sure all of that came with it. You were walking on eggshells, afraid you what to do. I mean, if your brothers did anything, somehow it was coming back on you. Was there any kind of physical abuse or was it just the emotional? I mean, no, I don't say just lightly. I mean, was it specifically emotional?
There could have been physical, but I don't know what it is, but when my dad hit me at 5 years old, it left such a distinct print. It scared him. And I don't know that another child would have had, their body would have had the same reaction, but because that happened at five, I was playing with the dog bit me. He hit me for playing with the dog. And it was such a heavy print for a few days, and then it bruised that he didn't hit me after that. It was just verbal.
Okay. Yep. That might have been his wake up call
to
his reality that you are a girl and or a child, a young person that can't handle that. Absolutely. But so going forward, now fast forward a little bit, what happened? How did you get out? What were your thinkings as far as escapism and where did you go?
We talk about parentification. I had to figure out how to grow up because with all this going on, another layer was that my parents weren't parenting. They weren't nurturing. They weren't emotionally available. They weren't physically available many of the times. So I had to figure out how to adult at a very young age. And so, you know, added to the anger and the resentment. But fast forward, what I do now with my clients is I value anger. We look at anger because so many of my clients have been through antidepressants. They've been through these bouts of depression or manic depression, but it really isn't depression. And their medical professionals and the mental health professionals never asked if it could be internalized anger, the resentment, if it's anger and resentment or other emotions entangled. So what I do now is I teach people to honor the anger, to recognize it as a very functional emotion, and can we make it more functional? Can we reevaluate anger and look at it in a way that's protective, or that the anger was there to help us move forward in fight, flight, freeze, and not see it as this stigma of anger being a bad emotion, which it's not. It's, we just have to learn to use it more efficiently.
Right. Right. And cope with it. And, you know, you feel it and it's just like any emotion. It's a natural emotion, but we are very stigmatized and very conditioned to, when you get mad, hold it in. Like, don't, I can remember even saying, I mean, I'm guilty of telling my daughter, like, stop growling. And I, you know, when she would get mad, she would growl. And I'm like, don't growl, growl with your brother again. You're getting your mouth washed out with soap, you know, like, and that was, you know, I look back at it now and I'm like, she needed to growl. She needed to stomp her feet and yell and scream. And when she got mad at her brother, because it sure beat hitting him, which is what I'm sure she wanted to do, you know, but yeah, it's crazy how we don't let that happen. That's one emotion. We're getting better about letting people cry, but we still don't let people. And that's why people get so pent up and then they explode, because it's a powerful emotion.
Or it overwhelms the nervous system and they have things like fibromyalgia. It's all of these emotions just built up. And what happens when you build up? You build up, you have these internal earthquakes and they manifest as physical pain, physical suffering. But
Absolutely.
one of the questions I ask my clients, and I've done this on TikTok Live, is name one person that you can emulate on how they express anger. Someone who you have seen publicly or personally that has expressed anger in a beneficial and healthy way. And I find that that's a really hard question for people to answer. Who are our people?
Yeah, because I'm thinking of the people that I know that get mad, and it's usually, like when they're angry, it's snarky comments and just nothing productive.
Yeah, right. Who
Nothing.
are our people?
Right. That's a pretty profound question. I'm gonna have to contemplate that one. Might take a minute though.
I went into studying anger as part of a research project, and I found that we have like love languages. There's books on the love languages, but we don't talk about anger language. And anger is through all of this, my child and even being in the military, suck it up, swallow it down, suck it up, we gotta go. And there's
Yeah.
no expression of emotion that I found. Different people need different things with anger. So some people, they need someone to just witness it, just a witness. Like, witness me being angry. Other people want a mirror and they want someone to mimic. So if I'm like, I they want the person that's with them to like, I know the songs. And some people want the counter. They when they're angry, they want the humor,
Right.
the anchor, the sail anchor. Counter to make it funny, like really angry, and like, I know this is so ridiculous. And that and when my clients started recognizing their anger pattern, they could communicate that to others and say, okay, when I'm angry, this is what I would like, this is how I would like you to support me in moving through my anger. And that changes a lot.
Well, and I'm just thinking about when you said that, how you can you support me? And again, it's a very strong emotion, and it's very similar to grief. Like some people want to be left alone, some people want to be hugged, some people want to talk about that loved one, some people don't. Like it's, and it's, but if you can meet them where they're at, because it only just adds a level of frustration. If you are angry and someone says, "Suck it up, buttercup," it could send you off the charts. And especially, it's when you grew up in that all the time, like you said, you didn't know into your early 40s how literally dysfunctional it was, but it was anger coupled with all kinds of other stuff because you were angry and then you had to deal with all the things you were angry about. So you were angry that you weren't being treated fairly, but that transpired into, well, I wasn't being treated fairly because he liked the guys better, which meant I wasn't lovable, which meant I wasn't even worthy to be a child in this family. All he cared about was the boys. So there's all of those things. So it's funny that you really grasped. I mean, to me, it's interesting that you really grasped the anger part of it versus the I'm not worthy and the, with all the other stuff that came along. I mean, sure, you had to deal with all of that as well.
And I had that too. My self-esteem was, my self-esteem was very impacted. And I found that I was using food to give me space because th that childhood then evolved in this very dysfunctional way. And it wasn't how I realized my dad had a hoarding addiction was I have a friend who's an addiction therapist. And I happened to go visit her and she had a book, The Cartman Drama Triangle. And she's like, I think you should read this book. And so I spent an hour reading it. Like, oh my gosh, this is my life. Rescuers and persecutors and victims and this do-si-do of dancing. It's in it's m more it was more life-changing. to be able to name it. Because up until that point, I had the frustrations, I had the emotions, but I couldn't name it. I couldn't name it as drama. I couldn't name it as dysfunction. I couldn't name it as addiction. I didn't have those words yet in my vocabulary. Once I named it, because how my brain needs it to be is I need to be able to name it to then take action with it. And
Yes.
so I think that's important for people, for viewers, when they're going through things, to have the opportunities to name what they're feeling and to make it okay, to have permission to name those things in our childhood. And that's for some people, that's a powerful first step in the healing process.
It absolutely is, because I know I deal with a lot of people and they'll just say, well, I thought it was normal. I thought it was this. I thought it was this. And I'm like, okay. And now after an hour, what do you think? And they're like, and they always say, I want to say it was abuse. And I'm like, then say it.
Yeah,
Don't
own it.
stop it. I want to say it. Just say it. Like, yeah. And then we can start going forward, because then up until now you've said it wasn't that bad. It was must have whatever happened must have been my fault and all this other stuff. No, flat out, it was abuse. Let's start dealing with that. And that is powerful. And that's with a lot of things. And that's with your emotions. I mean, I know people, including myself, that were in their 20s or 30s before they ever even considered feeling an emotion or trying to name it. And then, or an experience, you have to, yes, it was abuse. And no, you don't have to go back and relive it, but you have to go back and acknowledge it. And you have to name it. And then you can, give it a life of its own. And then you can do what you need to do with it. You can reframe it. You can change the story about what happened. You can stop filling in all the blanks with your mind that didn't exist. I mean, there's tons of different things you can do with it once you know what it is. So talk about, I mean, now, so are you, what would you consider yourself as far as what is your title?
I'm a doctor of metaphysics, so my
Okay.
title is metaphysician. My specialties are understanding the impact of emotions on our mind and our body. And I also developed a modality called the Mural Method. So people can go back into their timeline, but in a third person perspective and as the observer to speak to the younger self. So they're distinct identities rather than having to relive something traumatic in first person. I'll take them back. And I go with them. I can travel with them because we're using metaphysical approaches to be able to go back into that memory. We step into it like ghosts, and then we speak to the essence of that memory because they're very different. It's like the original word document is that original event, but then through time we revise the story. We have more information to make judgments on that story. So we have this revised adult version, and then we have how the child perceived it. And we reconcile. We give them each what they need. Because a child might say, I just want to be hugged. And we can hug that child. And the adult might say, I want closure to this.
Right.
And the child says, okay, this is the puzzle piece I can give you to release the energy, the emotions in our body so we can move forward.
Amazing. I love it. And I mean, that's the big thing now. I mean, ever since what that book, The Body Keeps Score, and
It's on this projector
I recommend it to
right
absolutely
there.
every person I talk to that don't under they just sometimes don't understand. And that was the sim although there was a lot of, I don't want to say big words, but there was a lot of science in it in the book. But the whole overall picture of it was literally everybody reading that book that's gone through something like that can put themselves in the shoes of the person writing the book and go, I get it now. I get it. And even the simple tricks. Like I was talking to someone the other day and we were talking about beliefs that you have. And you there's a quick my quickest test, and it's I didn't come up with it, but if you say, oh, I feel like a duck today, how do you feel? Well, you feel happy and get silly, and because that's a ridiculous thing to say, but then say, I feel like I deserve all good things today. And if you get a little pit in your stomach, then you don't believe that. So it's still stored, that belief is still in there. And it's, yeah, the body is, it's kind of like the brain. The brain is amazing and it protects you and it does what it has to do at the time. And then it doesn't always serve you moving forward. You have to.
But it will protect it, its job is to protect, even if it's protecting itself against itself.
Exactly. So talk about what other things, like what, how did you get started when you realized, okay, this is completely, something is completely off. Say, let's just say your aha moment where you started your journey.
It started when I deployed in 2016.
Okay.
Very metaphysical. That was never on my to-do list. Like, I want to be a metaphysician when I grow up. That was never on my wish list. Like, entrepreneur, yes. Metaphysician, to me, metaphysician was crystals and sage and tarot cards and none of which I know what to do with if you were to put those in front of me. I didn't realize that it was the philosophical pillar that examines why we're here. So I was deployed in 2016. I don't know if you've read Man's Search for Meaning by Viktor Frankl.
No, I have not read that.
Brilliant book, one of my favorite books. He was a psychiatrist going into the Holocaust, and he observed human behavior in extreme tragic trauma situations, and then wrote a book about these observations of resilience. So I deployed, and on this deployment, spiritual, metaphysical things were happening that were far beyond what I even could put words to at the time. And they just kept happening and happening, like voices, feeling energy pulling my shoulders to go in one direction, things I could not speak out loud because you don't tell anyone you're hearing voices when you're deployed. That's just not safe.
Right.
I come back from the deployment and it's getting a little bit stronger, and I came home to a husband at the time that was just not okay. He had completely dissociated. He was not home, but not home. And that just the there was a bit level a huge tidal wave of betrayal that came in, and these things started unfolding, and my spiritual capacity kept growing and growing. The voices got louder. And then 2019 came, my friend passed away, and I was in mission mode, like, we're going to get through the funeral, we're going to do this and help the family. But about 6 weeks after she was buried, I went into this massive fibromyalgic period of time, like 5 days of constantly feeling like I was about having a cardiac arrest. It was just this
Right.
intense pressure to scared me. First time I'd ever felt pain like that in my life, and that was extreme. And so this feeling of you have to understand emotions, you need to figure out why you have this, it's not for you to keep, you need to this inner voice is like, you need to solve this problem,
Yeah.
you need to unravel this to understand why you're experiencing it, so you can help other people unravel their emotions so that they don't suffer like this. And so that became the beginning of this journey that led me into researching emotions.
Very, very interesting. And there needs to be more of it. But I love that we're in an age where it's okay. Like things are starting to be talk about it, feel it, not, oh, those people are out of the picture, get over it. Nothing is more frustrating than hearing someone say, they're gone, get over it. It's over. Like it's not over until it is physically released from your body. Until then, it's not over. And so give it some simple tips. I know a lot of the listeners out there are looking, are now they're leaning in going, okay, I got this. How do I start to release some of this? What are some first steps you would give?
Honor the journey. It's really hard for people sometimes to find meaning in the suffering, to say, well, especially when it was people that clients of mine that went through something extreme, like a physical violation, incest, or an assault of some type, to say, like, what's the meaning of this? How am I supposed to make friends with this? So the first thing I say is to honor that you went through this, honor that you survived it. And then the next is to acknowledge the emotion. Many times when I have the ability to step into people's bodies to feel what they're feeling. So when they're on on social media live with me and they're coming up for a demonstration, I'll step in and I can validate what they're feeling. And I'm feeling it in my body because I'm in their essence. And that really gives the mind this, I'm not making it up. This is real. If she's feeling it, then this is real in me. And it validates. That validation is really powerful. And the body sometimes is just craving. It doesn't need anything more than to acknowledge that something is sitting there, an emotion is sitting there, and that can release the emotion. So that would be the second one. And the third one is finding a story that allows the suffering to have a meaning. So for people that have gone through extreme trauma, is can we take that trauma and the healing journey and help the people that haven't crossed the bridge yet? Can we lean back over and help the next group of people coming forward that are in the midst of it and need support and want to have validation? Can we then help the next few people cross the bridge?
Nice. I think the first key is just awareness. Start to be aware of your body. You know, where do you feel things when somebody says something? Because like you said, people don't know. When you grow up like that and you get all these limiting beliefs and you have all of this stuff stored in you, you don't know why you do what you do. And instead of, you know, getting a feeling or getting angry and snapping at someone and saying, well, you know, and then beating yourself up about it, just be curious. Start to ask yourself why. I mean, look at, you know, I always say, give yourself grace and be curious instead of judgmental with yourself. Because if your best friend snapped at you, you would be curious instead of judgmental with them. You would want to know, you'd say, you know, hey, what's wrong? Like, what are you thinking? What are you feeling? What is going on in your head? Before you would tell them they were rude and obnoxious. But we tend to not do that to ourselves. We tend to beat ourselves up pretty bad.
I have four questions. I use four questions frequently with my clients. The first one is who or what are you? So we identify it. So if there's something in the body or a thought that's stuck, who or what are you? Asking internally, where did you come from? How long have you been here? And how are you helping me? And that fourth one really catches people. Why is this pain? How is this pain helping me? Well, let's ask it. And sometimes it's we're protecting her, or we're regulating so that he or she doesn't move too fast. Like, oh, there's a help in here.
Can you give an example of the 1, 2, 3, 4, like a real life example of somebody that might come to you?
Let's say physical pain. So let's say there's a locked shoulder.
Okay.
When I raise the vibration and we go in, so people bring their mind to the shoulder, bring your attention there and ask who or what are you? And it's usually an emotion. It'll say, oh, it's resentment. Okay. How long have you been there? 9 years old. Okay. Where did you come from? Mom or dad or this specific event. Okay. How are you helping? We're keeping him or her safe so that they don't reach too much, because reaching too much was not safe when we were a child. And so wanting to take things, maybe it was taking food out of the fridge and our parents would hit us because we weren't supposed to touch the food, or we weren't, even when we were hungry, we couldn't touch the food on the counter. So that programming gets stuck in the loop. So it's trying to help something that is 30 years old, no longer a safety issue to take food off of a counter. And that's the one of the simpler approaches that we take to releasing some of the emotions in our body that are being stored because of trauma.
And that is not probably something that people can learn very quickly to do on their own. I mean, you want somebody that knows what they're doing to help you with that. I mean, you can ask yourself where you feel it in your body, and you can kind of go back and do the general steps to, you know, walk yourself through with a timeline and stuff like that. But it's definitely, I mean, you need someone like you, or someone that can literally do the timeline work and do all of that with you, which is very helpful. And what do you do? You just have one-on-one clients?
Or group.
You do a group. Does your group have a catchy little cute name?
No, they're astro. I'm a metaphysician, so we're going to be playing on a different board game. So my astral groups, we go and we visit. We might visit shamans in another dimension and gain the wisdom from them and learn how to heal from their perspective. Or we might go and meet energy beings from a different planet. Because I'm a metaphysician,
Yeah,
it's part of my life.
absolutely.
And having that external wisdom come into the group then gets to ask questions, they get to feel different energies and then address the things in their body that this wisdom is bringing in. And
Yeah, I
so
mean, and
the
it's all
healing.
energy. It's all me. I one of the guests on my show a couple months back was a Kutumi channeler.
Ooh.
And it was really, he's really good. And I've watched a lot of his, and it is true. And you're just listening to this, and you know it's not really him speak. You know what I mean? It's not, I mean, it is him. You're watching him, but the voice is different. Everything's different. And you just know, like, this is ancient old wisdom that will not steer you wrong. You know? And it's really interesting, very interesting.
Yeah.
So the journey is never over. What are your next steps? Or are you you're just helping a lot of people right now, aren't you?
Yeah, I wrote a book. I haven't it hasn't gone into editing yet, but I'm in the phases talking about all the lessons of my life that were psychology, being able to name things. So taking all these moments in my life, naming them, and then being able to give them as examples for other people so that they can validate their story. Because it's what I find is that very often it's death by a thousand cuts. We can't say, oh, it was this one singular event, this one singular person. It's the culmination of all of these micro moments of trauma. So it's harder to identify. It's harder to justify and name. And so I tell hundreds of stories in this book of this is what happened. This was my childhood. This was what my dad did. This is my experience. And then I name it so people can then have a guidepost to help them understand their story.
That's awesome. To give example, I mean, that's how we learn, is we learn by stories. We learn by going, oh yeah, that's me. You know, I'm sure they'll read some of them and just be like, oh my gosh, I feel like she is speaking to me. I mean,
That's the goal.
that's the goal, and I'm sure you do it well. That's amazing. Awesome. I love it. Would you know the name of the book?
It has a working title yet, so I'm not going to name it because I think it's going to, I have a feeling the editors are going to go and change some things.
Oh, of course, of course. And we'll put those, you know, when it comes out, you can change the show notes on here at any point. So we will always keep it updated with when the book comes out. We'd love to have you back on and do maybe a more specific niche, like some of those questions or something like that, you know, when the book launches, to make sure you get it out there, because we all need this. We all need practical, real life experiences, and then how to dissect them, how to take your experience and figure out where that fits into what's next? What can we do with this information? You know, it's, I mean, once you name it, you still have to do something with
You have to take action.
it. Yeah,
Definitely.
you got to take action. So this was super fun. Thank you so much for coming. But I don't, but if people want to reach out to you, they want to work with you, they want to just hear more or read your blog post or whatever you have, what's the best place for them to reach you?
Right now, it could be the website,
Okay.
TikTok, YouTube. It's all of them follow the same pattern, one in Prima. So ONE EMPRIMA.com
Okay,
for the
and
website.
perfect. I will put that in the show notes, so that everybody has links, because I'm sure people are listening and going, oh, I like that metaphysical stuff. I know nothing about it, but people are always telling me stuff like, oh, you should do this and you should read this and you're very intuitive. And I'm like, ah, it's just overwhelming to me. But it's so real. I mean, it's so, when people, you know, with like just any of that stuff, like human design, even, like where people are telling me, and I'm like, how do I feel like I get in a room with these people and they know me better than I know myself, you know? But it's very fascinating, and it's very, just the energy in general, and learning about the energy and how to feed off the energy of other people. And, you know, it's one of the first things I tell people. If you get into a room and the energy feels bad and you just don't, it feels bad, get out. You know? You know, God gave us intuition. And a lot of it is negative energy. Get just avoid it, you know? But what would be your piece of advice, like, or words of wisdom, or something that people can take away, tangible, something to hold on to from you?
If I had to offer something, I would say through hundreds and hundreds of clients, our superpower is usually hiding behind the darkest moments of our life. And if we are willing to face those darkest moments, that's how we get to our treasure. That's how we get to our purpose and our meaning in life, how we get to why we're here.
Absolutely. I love it. I absolutely love it. Thank you so much, Annie, for coming on.
Tammy, thank you for having me. This was a lot of fun.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And for all of yous out, for all of yous, listen to me. Think I'd front be from New York or something. For all of yous, for everybody out there listening, tune back in and we'll have more and more stories of hope and healing. And that was Annie, and we appreciate her so much for coming. Thank you very much. Thanks so much for joining me today on the Adult Child of Dysfunction podcast. If this episode resonated with you, or you think someone else could benefit from what you heard, why not share it with someone you care about? Let's heal from our past and take back control of our lives together. If you're interested in learning more, head on over to www.tammyvincent.com for a free chapter of my book, Surviving Alcoholic Parents. While you're there, be sure to catch my invigorating seminar, Awakening Your Authentic Self. Together, we will rewrite our stories and turn trials into triumphant smiles. Until next time, keep embracing your strength, keep being you, and know that you are more than enough. You are way more than enough right here, right now.